Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00066. Recorded on February 13, 2024. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Blue Valentines, Part 1, Chapter 66.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Coming to you, recorded live in the F-150 Mobile Studio. This is Maverick 88, and you are listening to Post-Harlan Monologics. And right there is about as good as a radio voice as I can come up with. I have no voice for radio, no face for TV. I'm kind of caught out in the no man's land of infotainment, but we do the best we can, right? We do the best we can. Now here, Post-Harlan Monologics, by premise, generally concerns itself with what I call the runaway train of thought, and I just kind of meander my way from one topic to another, segueing in and out, meandering through this whole drivel of mindlessness. And if you really read between the lines, you will find the genius of it all hidden therein. But short of paying me that much attention and that much respect, it'll probably come off as a whole bunch of hokey stupidity, right? And you could go either way with it, right? It's really up to you. It's really up to you, the listener. But again, with the premise of it, there's a concern with things in general that move along this runaway train of thought that anchors in relativity to various elements of the experience of living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, right? That in conjunction with the experience of my life, and you get the Post-Harlan, which is a DFW part, and the Monologics, which is the Maverick 88 part, right? All this comes together to be some kind of really stupid genius. If I don't say so myself. So something that really surprised me when I learned it a little while back, it's a particular performance entertainer, a singer and an actor, who was world renowned. He actually died just a couple of years ago. Lived a full enough life. Was a guy. He was born Marvin Lee Aday, A-D-A-Y. He was born here in Dallas, right? This I didn't know. And as a kid growing up, he went by the initials M-L. So he was M-L Aday. And it turned out that he was somewhere in the proportions of 5'2" and weighing in at about 240, and his classmates here in Dallas began to use those initials and referred to him as Meatloaf instead of Marvin Lee, right? And thus was the fame of Meatloaf established here on this planet Earth in DFW, right? Marvin Lee Adday, otherwise and better known as Meatloaf, it was a Texan, right? He was a Texan, and it turned out he was rather conservative, which is surprising in the entertainment industry, right? You get this one odd person every here and there in a crowd where the peer pressure is so very much leftist in their ideology. There's always seems to be that one or two odd duck that's actually conservative, and Meatloaf was one of those, right? Meatloaf was one of them. Now, Meatloaf was very, like I said, very famous. I gotta say right off the bat, I was never like a big fan. I was kind of indifferent about him, but I recognize that he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, vocal performers in all of rock and roll history. He was that good. Powerful voice, wide range. He never looked the part, so he was really ahead of his time, right? He came to prominence in a time where the most famous people not only were able to, like, as far as musicians were concerned, they were not only masters of their craft audibly, but they also looked beautiful, right? You had to have the complete package in the 1970s and into the 80s to make it, right? To make it. In the 90s, that changed. It didn't really matter how you looked. In fact, you got bonus points for looking strange, for looking odd, right? To the point where people start now to make themselves to be weird on purpose, which doesn't really work, you know? You are what you are. You are what you are. So now Meatloaf in the 70s, he becomes famous. Why? Because of his great voice. And in spite of his appearance, right, the way Meatloaf looked, he was a big, heavy, just a naturally predisposed, fat, obese person. And he had long, stringy hair. And when he would perform, he would let everything out, right? Very physical performance from this big guy. And he would sweat. So he had this sweaty and stringy hair, and he was big and fat. You know, he had these button-down shirts with the buttons would be popping open, and very intense with his singing. And but he didn't look like a quote-unquote rock star. He looked like a big, fat, greasy mess, right? But never a greater voice came out of a body than what this guy had to give, right? And so he built his celebrity through the 70s. He got involved early on in his life with, and I don't know how it happened. I mean, I don't know his whole biography and everything like that. I picked a couple of things here and there on the internet and got a general background of it. I'm interested in him because he's a native Texan, right? He's a Texan and a conservative Texan, but also a pop culture icon, right? All the same. He was involved with the original Broadway performances, right? This guy was a Broadway performer before he became an international rock star. And he was part of the original Rocky Horror Show theatrical cast on and off Broadway, apparently. And that was one of those Broadway productions that in the 70s, there was a bunch of them, right? But it was one of them. He was actually in another one called Hair, the hippie thing, which was a couple years earlier, or a couple years ahead of that. He ended up being cast into the movie version, which was called the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And he had one notable song. It was sort of kind of like a minor role in the movie. He had a song that he sang, Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul. And you know what? I didn't like Rocky Horror. I wasn't a part of that whole thing, and I'll describe that in a minute. But there was one song. I have friends. I'm kind of all over the place. I'm trying to pull this all together, right? This is not about Rocky Horror. This is about Meatloaf. But this is a stage in his life, and this is part of my familiarity with Meatloaf, right? ML a day, Marvin Lee a day. I had a friend, you know, basically a friend. I could say there was a couple of friends, you know, my friend and some of his friends. They were really big into, I can't even say really big. They were kind of sort of big into this Rocky Horror thing. And what I mean to say by that is Rocky Horror Picture Show, it became this, what do you even call it? It's like this shared performance between the actors and the audience, where the audience would dress up, like masquerade in the parts of the characters in the film, in the movie, in the production show, whatever, right? And then at certain lines, an actor would say a certain line and the audience would respond out loud to it. And it was kind of sort of funny, the way it was timed out and everything like that. And for the whole like hour and a half, however long the show was, you had this interaction going on between the movie screen and the audience, right? So you had people who were really, really into it, who would get all dressed up and they knew every line and they knew every reaction to every line. Those were the people who were really into it. Then there was the people who were kind of sort of into it, who liked all that stuff but didn't really participate. These were my friends. Really, for most part, it was really one friend that influenced some of his friends around him. And you know, we would hang out at this guy's house and we'd drink beers and smoke pot. His parents were kind of liberal like that. They just kind of turned their backs and just let us do whatever we want. And, you know, we loved their parents. It wasn't like we were disrespecting them at all. That was kind of one of the houses that we had where it was kind of like a safe house for us teenagers to go party at, hanging around, and it was okay. You know, shit, they would hand us guns and we'd go out back and, you know, blow up, you know, old kegs and stuff like that. Why we're on drugs, you know, it was that kind. It was one of my favorite places to be. I'll be honest with you, right? It was one of my favorite places to be. So we would be there hanging out, just doing our thing, really, just hanging out, pissing away time like teenagers do. Hey, summertime blues, you got nothing to do, you know, whatever it was, winter, whatever season it was. We'd be sitting there smoking pot, drinking beer. And he would have the soundtrack from this movie playing, Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I went through this with him so many times, you know. I heard that dang cassette so many times in moments like that, that I started to know the songs and the words to the songs, but I really didn't care for it, right? I didn't really care for it because it's kind of gay. It's kind of gay. Rocky Horror Picture Show is basically lampooning like all the old horror films ranging from, like, I don't know, the 20s or 30s into the 60s. You know, it's kind of like a spoof on that. It's very campy, and really it is gay. I mean, the main character in it is a alien transvestite from a planet called Transylvania, right? And one of the songs was most sweet transvestite from, how does it go, transsexual Transylvania, right? And it was played by, who's the guy's name? Tim Curry, I think, the actor. He was the one who played the clown on the original Stephen King miniseries, It, right? There was a movie since then, which I've never seen. I probably should, but I read the book, and then I saw the miniseries, and he played the Pennywise the clown, right? Did a good job, but the guy creeps me out because I saw him, you know, dressed up in women's clothes, and he will never not be gay to me. He may be for all I know. He may not be for all I know. But that association is set. And every time I see that guy's face and his mouth move, I just see gay. And it's a repulsion to me, right? And that tone kind of makes Rocky Horror Picture Show something I don't really want to be a part of. And I never understood it, right? It was difficult for me to like be in that environment, doing what we did as burnouts, you know, smoking pot, drinking beer. And you're listening to really what was basically traditional rock and roll type of music. It wasn't like show tunes, like way out there, gay out there show tunes. But they were just very rock and roll, like traditional rock and roll in orientation for the most part. And you got that one song in there that's singing about this transsexual transvestite and or transvestite from a transsexual Transylvania. You got that whole vampire and transgender and gay and all the, you know, cross-dresser stuff. This does not fit into who we were. We were more like young aspiring bikers, like 1%er type bikers, but teenagers without motorcycles. Some of us actually had motorcycles, but they were dirt bikes or enduros. They were my friends. They were badass. They would ride on the street when you weren't supposed to, and you know the cops would chase them, and they'd get away and never get caught, right? But not all of us had bikes like that. But we lived, and I've gone through this at some length earlier on, like back in the episodes in the like early 30s, right? The Down Come series, I call it. I went through all this stuff. What it was like being a burnout. We were more or less this particular sect of burnouts were like teenage bikers, right? Teenage like 1%er bikers. That's how we lived. That's how we looked. How we dressed. How we did everything. And then in the middle of it all, you've got this like transsexual, transvestite song. It just didn't fit, you know. And of course, if you've got a main character in a movie like that who's dressed in women's clothes, the stockings and all that stuff and the heels, when you go to the movie theater, they used to play midnight movies, right? That's how they do it. At midnight, you'd come out all wasted and you would have this kind of back and forth like I was describing earlier. People dressing the parts and then acting out in response to the lines, everything like I talked about before. But you got a main character who's dressed up like a woman. Guess what? You're going to have some weird dudes showing up dressed like a woman. And I went one time to one of these midnight shows, and what I heard was gay, and the music was gayer still in person, right? So I didn't really have a taste for it. But I do have fond memories because this was my friend, and this is where we hung out. I got the association about him and the place and everything, which is good. But the music and the scene was never really mine, right? And it kind of, it's a conundrum. It's a conundrum. Excuse me. But I, you know, hey, I'm sober of thought and clear conscience. I could sort it out in my brain. I'm not going to go listen to the music. But of all the songs that I remember hearing on there was one of them that I kind of liked. And it was the Meatloaf song, right? Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul. Really straight. Excuse me, traditional rock and roll music, right? A girl and a guy, you know, teenagers in a car, parked somewhere, making out. They jump in the back seat, do their thing, come back in the back. Guy's fixing his hair, greasing it back like they did in the 50s. You know, Fonzie Potsy and Richie Cunningham and all that. Did it even mention Buddy Holly? I think it even mentioned Buddy Holly by name, right? So it really was a traditional rock and roll song. Belted out by Meatloaf for the soundtrack of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, right? That song I liked. I liked Meatloaf. And then shortly thereafter, Meatloaf bust on the international scene. He came to great prominence. The album came out, Bat Out of Hell. Like the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack came out in 75, I think I read. And then a year or two later, I think it was 77, Bat Out of Hell came out. Bat Out of Hell had a whole bunch of singles on it that were just hugemongous, right? Absolutely enormous songs. In fact, Bat Out of Hell, the original one, it's like a trilogy, a three-part that was done over a couple of decades of time. And I'm not familiar with the second and third one at all. There was a one or two songs that got a lot of airplay, but I never heard the whole album, all the three. I never owned. This is one of those albums, right? It's one of the greatest selling, hugest selling albums ever made. It was on the charts for like, what was it, 19 years or something like that. It's crazy. You know, it's like up there with Dark Side of the Moon. It was one of those just albums that had that the selling longevity. It was timeless, you know. It's one of those timeless albums. And it had all these different songs on it. Some of them were rock. Some of them were kind of more adult contemporary. This guy had the range of vocals and the emotionalism in there. Really soulful, right? Really incredible. Meatloaf. Bat Out of Hell, right? This first one that came out of that trilogy was 77, right? All right. Well, the singles were released in 77 and some of them even 78, 79. Bat Out of Hell came out as an album compilation in 1977. Here's some of the songs, right? You took the words right out of my mouth. Paradise by the Dashboard Light. I remember that. See, that was the first song I knew because that has Phil Rizzuto, for all you Yankee fans and Italians in the audience, right? Phil Rizzuto was the Yankee shortstop, MVP shortstop, and Hall of Fame shortstop, and also the Hall of Fame broadcast announcer for the Yankees for like 100 years, right? The guy lived to be like 90-something, and he was just a Yankee from the time he put on the pinstripes at 22 years old or something like that. World War II vet, like five-time, six-time world champion. Played with Joe DiMaggio, played with Mickey Mantle. He was like that, you know, that he was Yogi Berra's best friend, right? Phil Rizzuto. Very, very famous, very popular locally in the New York City area. In fact, he lived in the town where I lived when I was a kid growing up, Hillside, New Jersey, right? I had cousins over there also. Cousins that like went to high school and graduated high school over there. We lived in the same town with Phil Rizzuto. Phil Rizzuto did a recording part of Paradise by the Dashboard Light, this Meatloaf song on Bat Out of Hell, 1977, where he had a guy who was like going around the bases and he, you know, he made it past first, he's going for second, he's going for third, and then he turns third and he's heading for home and he's about to slide in. And what it was expressing the guy trying to get to first base, second base with the girl, trying to get to third base, and then going all the way home, right? So the girl lets him get to first, second, and third. Meanwhile, it's Phil Rizzuto expressing this guy going around the bases. It was really clever. It was really cool. And because we were Yankee fans, I say we, I mean me and my cousin, right? I had a cousin, my cousin older than me. I mention him all the time. He was like a brother to me. He has passed away since. But he loved that, and he played that song for me. And you know, we would imagine who it is running around the bases. Yankees had Mickey Rivers back then, right? He led the league in stealing bases and everything. Mick the Quick, fast and a funny dude, right? Black dude out of Miami, talked faster than he moved, and he moved fast. You couldn't understand a word he said, right? Mickey Rivers. It wasn't Mickey Rivers. He had nothing to do with it. We just imagine that. Who would be fast enough like that, right? But we also got the premise. You're trying to, you know, get to second base with a girl, get to third base with a girl. Now he's heading for home, right? Here it comes. He's going to make it. I think he's going to make it. And then all of a sudden, a girl jumps in the middle of all this rock and music building up to this crescendo, and she goes, "Stop right there!" Right? And it's like, oh. He's just about to score with this girl. And she needed to know if he was serious and he was going to take care of her and everything like that. And then he makes his promise to her, yeah, I swear I'll love you to the end of time. And, you know, the next thing you know is he's stuck with this woman and he doesn't want to be. And now he's waiting for the end of time. It was a, you know, but the rock, it was a great rock and roll song, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, right? Very similar to the Rocky Horror song I talked about earlier. It's like the same song done by the same guy with different set of lyrics. With a whole lot more creativity brought in through the Meatloaf version of it later on. It's not the same song. They're different songs, but they are, there's a vast similarity in them all. It's very great. And that's what made me listen to it. I remember listening to that album in the sixth grade when I was 11 years old in our art class, right? It was basically a new album. I think it had been out maybe a year at that point. We had an art class in the sixth grade. And while we were drawing away or painting away or doing whatever, if you do an art class in sixth grade, the teacher would put albums on. And we would listen to this Meatloaf, side A and side B, while we were doing our art class stuff. And again, I got to hear the rest of it. Now, like I said, it wasn't all rock. You had these up and downs, right? Another single off it, All Revved Up with No Place to Go. the song Bat Outta Hell itself, and then one, then this is really the, like the adult contemporary, really slowed down song like Piano, and it's called Two Outta Three Ain't Bad. All right, Two Outta Three Ain't Bad. And for some reason, like, I liked all the rock songs, the rock and roll songs, they were done exceptionally well. I was a fan of it. I never owned it, of course. I said that before. Now I'm thinking I should, right? I should probably own this and listen to it. It's great American rock and roll music, you know, out of the 70s. But with a lot of hearkening back to the roots of rock and roll, going back to the 50s, right? Had that feel to it. Really good stuff. But this one particular song, Two Outta Three Ain't Bad, it touched my heart for some reason. I can vividly remember. Like, I used to hang out at this kid's house up the top of the hill. Like, my neighborhood had one way in, one way out. It was a subdevelopment, right? Early subdevelopments in suburban America. I lived in a semi-rural town, and the semi part of it was this subdevelopment that I lived in, right? It was a very well-to-do neighborhood. We were not well-to-do people. We just fell into a situation my father took advantage of, and we ended up, you know, living in a neighborhood where you had executives, right? You had executive-level people that worked in AT&T and Bell Labs. You had people who ran their own businesses. We had millionaires, you know, next to us and a couple doors down. When millionaires was something. It's still something now, but it was a lot something. It was almost like billionaire back then, right? I'm talking late 70s into the early 80s, you know. It was very well-to-do neighborhood. The units were cut out on like half acres and three-quarter acre tracts. Houses were not huge. They weren't mansions. They weren't McMansions. You didn't have like 5 and 6 bedrooms or anything like that. They were not obscene. And every one of them was different, right? They weren't cookie-cutter houses like you get in these freaking neighborhoods, these McMansion neighborhoods. You know, there's like four different styles of them with mix and match on the plans, and everything looks the same. Nah, every turn, every house was different. But anyway, we had the one way in, one way out, and it was up this long hill, right? And at the top of the hill, I'd make a left, and the block over on the corner of the next neighborhood going down, I had a friend that lived over there, and I would hang out with him, and we would do stuff. I've talked about this before, right? He has since passed, too. Way too many of us, and I'm very much overly familiar with this, have died way too young. I pray for the dead 5 days out of 7, right? For my dead, my personal dead. And on a 6th day, I pray for other people's dead when I'm at church. I've explained this before. And I've got a list of my own dead. I just went through this with a buddy of mine who I just ran into a couple hours ago, right? 150 people, right? 150 people, my own personal dead, people who I know or I've met in my life personally, with the exception of like an uncle and an aunt that never made it out of Europe to America, and a great-grandfather who died young, right, who I never got to meet. Everybody else is somebody who I knew personally, right? And a subsection of this list of dead people are people from my teenage party years. And that list on its own is like 40 long. 40 people from just this one little place in the world are already dead, like prior to the age of 60, right? And most of them well prior. And in both of these cases, my cousin and his friend, you're talking guys that were at or just past 40, right? And even me, I survived, but I had a heart attack when I was 45, and I flatlined during that process momentarily and came out of it okay, you know? Came out of it okay, alive and well, but that doesn't happen for everybody. And this friend of mine, okay, he's one of those who passed way too soon. He was a deadhead and all kinds of stuff, but we knew each other from like the 6th grade forward through. Like, he had moved in, like I moved in 1 year and he moved in like the year after, right? So we were kind of new kids in the neighborhood, and yeah, we were clowns and got in a lot of trouble and stuff like that. But I remember I would hang out at his place, and then like in the winter months, like it is now, it's February now, and in January, late December, up in the New York City area, the days are really short. Like, the sun goes down at like 3:30 in the afternoon, right? It's always dark. And I remember I would walk home, it being dark. I remember vividly this one night, for whatever reason, this song, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad, was pounding away in my head as if I had lived it. Now, you got to realize, I was only like 11 years old, right? I didn't live shit at that point in time. But that song really touched me. Now, I had a couple little girlfriends, you know, from kindergarten on, right? And I had the feelings that people have, you know, romantic feelings and heartbreak. You know, my parents would move us around, me and my brother. You know, we live in this one town. You get settled, you get friends, you might have a girlfriend, then all of a sudden, we're moving, and you're gone. It's like, what? You know, they just ripped the guts out of you, right? And you start anew, and then it happens again. It happened a couple of times in my life, and then whatever. I don't want to go off on that tangent, but I had some kind of emotional connection. Something triggered in me listening to this song, and it became one of the songs that I keep in my life that have me connected to my childhood. That when I hear that song, it puts me in a very particular place. And this place happens to be walking down Spring Run Lane in Martinsville, New Jersey, all by myself. And for a reason I can't understand. You know, I never lived that. In fact, all the girlfriends, I had a lot of girlfriends in my life, right? A lot. Way more than most people do, right? I've never really had a relationship. Actually, that song really talks about two relationships. I've never had a perfect set of relationships that made that song real to me. I've had kind of variations of it here and there that I could kind of like Frankenstein some Maverick 88 version of Meatloaf's experience, right? In that song together, you know, cobbled something together. But there's something in the emotion there. And 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad is talking about somebody who is involved with somebody else. And there's just something missing for that person that makes their relationship unsustainable, right? I want you, I need you, but there ain't no way I'm ever going to love you. And of course, it goes two ways. You know, one time he gets dejected by somebody who had that lack of feelings from him, and then somewhere else he dejects somebody else for having a lack of feelings in her. Something gets triggered in me in that concept, right? Of just the love just not quite being there really gets me at some level. I've been on both sides of it, but even at 11 years old, I really hadn't been, you know? So I don't know. I don't know why that struck me so much at that age. Very strange thing. But yeah, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. And you know, while we're on the topic of 2 out of 3, right? This is episode, right? 66. The 66th time I sat down and done this. And, a year and 4 months, 5 months. I forget exactly how it went. I think October 2022, whatever. It's been about a year and a quarter. Let's just call it a year and a quarter. I managed to churn out 66 episodes. I'm averaging somewhere on the course of an episode a week, even though I went on a 3 or 4 month hiatus, right? At one point, I was churning them out. Now, I'm restarting, and I'm going about a week at a time. And for the moment, it's going well. I've kind of went back to the original format once I got away from the introductory stuff, trying to keep it around an hour in length. I've dropped the F-bombs, and I feel so much better about that. I feel better about that. My attitude, it's a better thing. It's way easier to listen to without all those F-bombs being dropped. So I think it's improving as we go here, right? So a little quick hats off to my cousin up in Canada who advised me to take this route, right? Drop the F-bombs. 66, though, it's a number, right? We're talking about 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad by Meatloaf, right? Now, 66 is a percentage number, right? You've heard from the apocalypse, right? The book of Revelation, you had 666, the number of the beast, and all those old heavy metal bands like Iron Maiden. 666, the number of the beast, right? And all these televangelists. The number of the beast at 666, and he's coming to get you. You know about that, that 666. And everybody, you know, taking that number and just trying to decide who the beast is. Who's the Antichrist and all, right? Well, on these lines, and I'm not saying that's exactly what 666, this is exactly what 666 is, but there's something about that number, that percentage, right? Again, 2 out of 3. 66.6 is 2 out of 3. Just another way, another mathematical way of saying it. And I'm not skitzing on you with numbers here. This is not what I'm about. I'm not a numerology guy or anything like that. This is just straight up, hey, we're talking about 2 out of 3, right? 2 out of 3. What is significant about 2 out of 3? There's this, for lack of a better word, this two-thirds theory, all right? And I just kind of made that up. I haven't made up the theory. I learned this. I learned this stuff from learned people, real-life wizards, Orthodox priests, right? These two Orthodox priests, they do this podcast called Lord of Spirits, right? Lord of Spirits. They've been doing it since 2020. They've got this whole large catalog of these episodes. These are two priests, extremely knowledgeable about etymology and everything that has to do with religion, the Christian religion and other religions, you know. These guys know everything about everything that I want to know about, short of guns and knives and all that. But as far as spiritual things are concerned, incredible knowledge base, and they work well with each other, right? Couple of nerds. They're a couple of nerds. They get very nerdy very quick. They deviate off a topic, and they like to run off and talk about pop culture things like Star Trek and things like that. But they reel it back in and get back on track. They do like these 3-episode podcasts, an hour at a time. They bust them up into pieces. It's called the Lord of Spirits, and it talks about all this spiritual stuff. When I say spiritual, not like, oh, I feel so spiritual, like I just smoked a joint and I just feel so spiritual. No, I mean like spirits, like angels and demons and monsters, things of the spirit world, spirit entities. Got what I'm saying here? That is some cool stuff, right? That is some really cool stuff. And there's a network, right? It's an Orthodox thing. It's called Ancient Faith Radio. Ancient Faith Radio. You can go look that up. They actually have an app, right? An application that you can download onto your smartphone. And then you could go through all the variety of podcasts that they have available. In there somewhere is the Lord of Spirits podcast. I believe that they're probably also, they're on Spotify and things like that also. They can be found. You could just do a search for Lord of Spirits podcast through your web browser program, and it'll come up, right? These guys are great. I think they're great. And my priest concurs. My priest is all about, in fact, in our parish, at our church, there is a monthly get-together, which I've not attended for some reason. I think it's a timing issue. They get together a little early for me. But they review the topics and have a discussion, right? Our parish level discussion on the topics that come up in this podcast. It's really something. Even if you're not Christian, you might think of looking at this to get a little additional perspective on things you think about, like Genesis 6, right? The Nephilim, the fallen ones, the giants. I don't care who you are, what your background is, what your faith and everything like that. Inquiring minds want to know. This is the kind of stuff that anybody can get very curious about very quick, right? The Nephilim, all that. So what I learned, it's about this two-thirds thing, what the Nephilim are from this Orthodox perspective, from these two priests on this podcast, is there was a rite, right? A ritual that was performed in the way back times, right? In the way back times. It may still happen today. It's not to say that. It's pagan stuff, right? It's pagan stuff. And what you had would be a temple priest, right? A pagan priest at a temple, and they would bring a temple prostitute into a room with this guy on this bed, and they would be doing this ritual that involved the summoning of a demonic being. Now you've got three participants in one act of ritual sex, right? And when a pregnancy occurs as a result of that ritual sex, it is said that that child born of them is two-thirds human and one-third demon, right? How exactly that all happens, I don't know. But that is the premise. And that's how Nephilim were made, right? That's what they are. They are the offspring of this ritual sex, this pagan ritual sex. And yeah, you know what? And now you got three, right? There's three. Two-thirds of them are human. One-third ain't. 666, right? That's two-thirds of what? 1,000. 1,000 is what? Biblically speaking, 1,000 is that the number for infinity, right? It, way back then, 1,000 was a huge number. Then 1,000,000 became a huge number. Then 1,000,000,000 became a huge number. And now we're in the trillions era of civilization. This is the how we trade, you know. The numbers we use when we're trading dollars, right? Money. 1,000 used to be a huge amount of money, then 1,000,000. Now you've heard me talk about this before. Biblically speaking, now you're going back 2,000 years and then another 4,000 years before that. That history of that era of time, you're talking about thousands of anything. You're talking about basically an infinite number, right? So 666 would be two-thirds of that 1,000. And here's this whole two-thirds thing coming together. I hope I'm drawing a clear enough picture. Not easy to do, just by voice. But, yeah, so episode 66 and two-thirds, you know, two out of three ain't bad. And you get this two-thirds theory from these Orthodox priests about the Nephilim and how they came about being. And what you know about the Nephilim, again, that's in Genesis chapter 6. You know, they were the men of renown, right? These were basically, the kids were raised to be the elite of society. And they apparently were demonically possessed. There was an insertion that somehow happened in that ritual where a demon was entered into what would have been otherwise an innocent child, right? I don't know how all that works. I don't know exactly what these priests, these living wizards, right, think about. When I say that, because you ever see an Orthodox priest? They're walking around in robes and these hats and everything like that. They look like wizards, like you'd have like in Dungeons and Dragons. And in a great sense, in a spiritual sense, that's exactly what they are. They're really amazing people, right? For what they know, how they live. Truly. They have my respect. And I have no problem attending that kind of church and being part of that kind of worship service with those kind of people. Really cool stuff. Now, the Nephilim, of course, like I said, they become the elite of the society. This is the antediluvian era. This is before Noah's Ark. And if you read that Genesis 6, you see how the things that they did worked to destroy civilization, and everything was nothing but wicked. All mankind ever thought about from that point forward was evil imaginations and everything destructive and harmful. And God actually was upset with the whole situation, and that's why you had the great flood, Noah's Ark, all that happened. Wiped out all humanity and left but Noah and his family and these animals, right? Two of every kind on his boat, floating around. And when the waters receded, they were in the mountains of Ararat, and they got out and they started civilization over again, right? Whew, I said all that very fast. But that's that's how it all went down. It got up to the great flood, right? And the Nephilim were as they were at that point. And the results of the Nephilim, right? Well, just the Nephilim himself, but their impact on society, the way they ruined humanity, civilization. This is all down coming out of like the whole line of Noah. That's another story that I'm going to tell, right? That's part of the book I'm writing, but I'm not going to tell it right now. Cain, what did I say? Cain's line, right? The line of Cain. Some heavy stuff there, but the Great Flood happened to wipe out just the entire wrong direction humanity went. And God wanted to just kind of do a reboot, a restart. The Nephilim were wiped out in that process. They end up occupying hell, I think, if I remember right. They may also be disembodied spirits roaming on the earth. I think people have different perspectives on that. That may be the demons that we deal with today. I don't know. I don't know for sure. Still learning this stuff, but it's fascinating, and it's the best angle I've ever heard after decades of contemplating these things, right? And it's just fascinating. So you had the Great Flood happen and wash that away, and of course a Nephilim would appear again thereafter. This is part of a whole chain that if you go to Ancient Faith Radio and the Lord of Spirits podcast, you'll see there weren't just like the fall of demons that happened at one time. You know, Satan fell and rebel demons followed him. It happened like four or five different times. There was this spiritual falling, these angels falling from out of heaven into earth. So the Nephilim would recur again by the same process, even in times after Noah and the Ark, right? But up to Noah and the Ark, you had the Great Flood, washed all that stuff away. Speaking of great deluges, deluge, we've just had a succession of washout weekends here in post-Arlen, Texas, right? I don't know, it's 5 or 6 weekends in a row now that it's been mostly rain. A decided inability to get out, or really to even want to get out and do shit, right? And by shit, I mean everything ranging from chores to good times, fun, right? Kind of getting a little stuck. Now, what's happening here is we're in this pattern. This happens. I can't tell you how frequently it happens. It seems like it's an annual thing. You just kind of get in this run where you have nice weather during the week that's pissed away on the job. And then when the weekend rolls around, it rains and rains and rains and rains. I never really took all that much notice of it until I started riding a motorcycle, right? The motorcycle, you know, the weekends are the time to open it up and go places. And every weekend, it's like, it's raining, you know. You go through this. And it could be a winter / spring thing. I don't know. I don't really have it that much figured out. But, yeah, we had another washout weekend in DFW. And actually, 2 weekends ago, I decided to get up and kind of do something about it. I came up with this plan, and it was pretty good. It worked out. It could have actually worked out more if I felt like pissing away more money. But let me explain. You know, after 3 or 4 washout weekends, like I said, I came up with this idea. My wife on Saturday, she wants to get up and go and do things, right? And I don't blame her for that. And I always want to be a part of whatever she's doing. Now, a lot of times it involves her just going shopping and things. She could do that on her own. I don't need to be around for that. Depending on what kind of shopping it is, right? There's certain times I'll jump in and go with her. But I came up with this idea. It was sort of like shopping, but it's different. You know, it was more like treasure hunting, right? And the idea was this. Pawn shop hopping, right? Just going around the whole eastern side of DFW, like east of Dallas, and just hitting a whole bunch of pawn shops one after another, just seeing what you might find. And if you find something you just gotta have, get it, you know, get it. And it was kind of the closing out of her birthday week, which I mentioned in the previous episode, right? I had planned to take her out like a 2-hour drive out to a special cafe out in the country, like hill country area. But I wanted a nice day for that, so I didn't do that. I had to come up with something else. And this is what I came up with. And so we drove around and we stopped at pawn shops in, we went out to Plano, to a pawn shop out in Plano that I had gone to once or twice in the past. I had a stepchild that was renting a house with a couple friends of his in the neighborhood over there. And we go there, and it's a gun store now. It's a straight-up gun store. It's not even a pawn shop. We didn't even bother to go in. I like guns. That's part of why I like going to pawn shops. But I got like all the gun stuff I need for right now. I just, I'm not really interested in tempting myself into more stuff. I know it seems odd to say, but I mean, I'm good. You know, I could maybe stand to get some more ammo, but I'm pretty good there too. The only thing I would like to do is get certain primers that I'm missing for reloading. I think the small rifle primers I had a hard time getting my hands on last time I tried. But that's it. That's like the whole. It wouldn't kill me to get more gunpowder, but I got a shitload of that. Anyway, I didn't want to go in a gun store, so we just bypassed that place. So we had Plano on our agenda. We had Wiley on our agenda. We had Rockwall and Rowlett, and then Garland on the agenda, too. Doing this like big loop around the whole, I guess you'd call it the northeastern corner of DFW, right? And now Wiley, that's kind of like the home base pawn shop. I used to live in the neighborhood. I used to work from home. I would take off in the afternoons. I'd go to maybe AA meeting, and after that, I'd stop in this pawn shop. And in the pawn shop, you know, the pawn shops are great. All right, they're great for a guy like me. Like I said, they got guns. Where they got guns, they got knives. So there's those like the twins, right? You know, one begets the next. It just always seems to be that way, at least very frequently, anyhow. But pawn shops, they got guns, they got knives. Those are two things I like. They got guitars. I love guitars. They got tools. I love tools, you know. And I almost always can spend some time. Now, how it was back then with the Wiley pawn shop, you go in the gun section of it. You know, they got like a gun case and counter. An old guy. Used to be an old guy. He did the gun stuff. And he would come back. You'd start talking with this guy. What you got this? What you got that? And then you start going, exchanging stories and finding out what's going on in the world. Oh, they're selling this for that over there. And then another guy comes in, he joins a conversation. You know, within like 20, 30 minutes, you've got like six guys standing there hanging around, shooting a shit about guns and ammo and memories and experiences. And, you know, and it was just like a good time. And nobody would buy anything. You'd all walk out and go home, right? But you'd have an idea what the pawn shop was carrying and whatever. I wouldn't even go there looking for anything in particular. Usually, if I was, I would frequently come out with something. I bought a couple of guns at pawn shops. Not usually the most recommended way to go about purchases with them, but if you find a pawn shop that you get to know the people and you buy some other things from them and you're not getting screwed, you could take chances, and if something doesn't work out, you could usually go back and say, hey, this turns out to be a real piece of shit, dude, you know? I'm a customer here. Maybe you could work something out, right? So that was, like, always the home-based pawn shop for me, and they were always well-stocked with a whole good variety of stuff, right? And I would drop in there once every week or two and hang out like that, peruse around, see whatever. Now, I've gotten away from that over time. But then, of course, like I said, after that, we went down to a pawn shop in Rockwall and another one in Rowlett. We were going to one in Garland, but by the time we got to that area, we were done. We were done, and this is what I mean to say. You know, well, let me say more about pawn shops, right? Since I was telling stories about that, and I'll get into what we bought. We actually did buy some stuff this time, and every single thing was something that I didn't expect that we would buy ever, you know, ever. Well, just about every single thing. I got one little item, a spotter scope for the gun range that I got for dirt cheap that seemed to work better than the expensive one that I carry in my range bag that just drives me ape shit every time I go out to the range. But aside from that, everything else is completely unexpected. Something, like I said, I never expected my wife and I would come home with, right? Pawn shops, and you could... Like, I seen this, and I pretty much deduced this watching the TV series, and I don't know if it still runs or not. It was with the Richard Harris, the Pawn Stars, I think it was History Channel. It was a great show. I love watching that show. I thought that was just excellent. There was so much value in that, so much interest. You know, the items, the interaction between the customer and the shop owners, the workers, everything like that, the negotiating, the deals. It was a really excellent premise for a television series, right? And well, one thing I took away from watching that as many times as I did was basically the way these pawn shops go about it, about their deal. They will give you, they will figure out what the known value is of your item and offer you 50%. And then you start haggling back and forth from there, right? So I go into a pawn shop knowing that whatever price it is they got labeled there is probably something they lowballed on somebody else, plus a markup, right? And you're already in their markup range. You're good at that price, but you could probably haggle them down from there. And usually you can. They don't even usually give you much of an argument. Here's a case in point, right? One of the things that we came home with was a TV. A TV, right? The couple that never watches TV. The couple that doesn't own a TV. We hate TV. And we won't watch, quote-unquote, television. We won't watch cable television. We won't watch any major networks or anything like that. Not even minor networks. We won't watch anything that is being broadcast as, quote-unquote, television. We will watch movies. We will watch YouTube videos, things like that, of our choice at our leisure when we do it, right? But we're not going to sit there and watch TV. We're not going to be right up to the current. We're not getting into the propaganda, basically. We're not. Our brains are not going to be subjected to, you know, that the hypnotic zombieism that you get in front of a TV. And this is a big-ass TV, 65 inches. Not only do we get a TV, we got a 65-inch TV. Covers half the wall, right? And, well, that was part of the point of it. We're watching, when we do watch movies, we sit down and we put our smartphone on the table, right? We're both, you know, half blind and we're peering into this thing. And that's how, when we dated, that's how we dated. We would watch movies together on our phones sitting in the truck, like Paradise by the Dashboard Light, right? The Meatloaf song I was talking about earlier. So we got this big old TV. Now, here's what I'm talking about, the deal. They had it for $250, which is dirt cheap, right? 65-inch TV that works, a pretty thin panel, nothing like old time or anything like that. A pretty new TV. They had other ones similar to it, some a little bigger. Well, none really any bigger than that. Some of them the same size. Some of them a little smaller, down to like 55-inch. I mean, it makes a difference. Those are still very big TVs as far as I'm concerned. But they were all like $400, $500. We got this one. It's LG, right? It's a known brand. It's not like some, you know, guy cobbled it together in his workshop and called it a TV and here you go. The one difference between it and all the other ones was it didn't have little footsie stands, right? You couldn't just put it up on a table somewhere. You had to hang it, right? You had to hang it, which means if you bought the thing, now you were obliged to go somewhere and pick up wall mounts and then do all the work for mounting it, you know? My wife and I look at each other. It's like, well, we could do that. You know, there's nothing to it. I'm too quick on the phone. You know, where could we get a wall mount? How much do they cost? You know, we were in it for like $20, right? $20, $25. So we got this big-ass TV, went home, and she ran out to the store and got the mounts, came back, we hung the thing, we got this big old TV on the wall, right? Never expected to get that, but the price was $250. The price was $250, and I said, offer him $225. She goes, offers him $225, they just nod their head like it was nothing. And then, when she paid and got the receipt back, they had actually knocked it down to like $199 or something on top of that. We don't know why, right? That happened to us twice that day. That was in Rowlett. Over in the Rockwall one, see, they're owned by the same company. We bought, here's another thing that we bought that I never thought would happen. We bought a PlayStation, a PS3, right? This is old. This is going back 10, 12, 15 years, something in that range, right? Older technology. I think they're at the PlayStation PSP 5 now. So, but it's not so old that like the games that it plays sucks or anything like that. It's a very useful, you could use it as a Blu-ray player, DVD player. It's all good. They had that on the wall for, I think it was like $50, $55, maybe $60, you know, with a controller and all, everything works. And I said, hey, offering them $50 or what do you, like $10 less. And they said, okay. And then we got the receipt and it was like 40 or 30 something. I forget what it was, like stupid low compared to what we agreed to, right? This place just, they basically Jewed themselves down for us. We didn't have to do it. Just, I guess they needed to move this stuff, you know. It's incredible. You know, really ironic. Is ironic the right word? Coincidental is probably the better word, right? Coincidental thing happened. In the last pawn shop in Rowlett, I was looking at the guitar section, and they had on the wall a Fender Acoustasonic Jazzmaster, right? They do a Jazzmaster version of this guitar. They do a Telecaster version of this guitar. They do a Stratocaster version of this guitar. What this guitar is a thin line acoustic, like a hollow body, but thin line. It looks like an acoustic. It sounds like an acoustic. They run it through a single pickup. The pickup is digital. There's like a six switch changer or knob, and each of them has its own digital mode of sound, like a modeling system, right? And it's like a $1,700 or $1,800 guitar, brand new. When they came out, my wife and I went down. There's a Sam Goody down in Dallas, and we went down there. They were the only ones around that I could find that had them in stock. I was looking for the Telecaster version. Yeah, they were expensive like that. This, and I played it. Like 2-3 days before, I got together with the guys at church. I play guitar and drums. We have we get together and jam, basically. One of the guys brought one of these things in, and that's what I was playing that day. I don't know if I mentioned this before or not. So like for 2 hours, I was cranking away on this dream guitar. It really is. It was the Jazzmaster version. And in this pawn shop in Rowlett, they had the Jazzmaster Acoustasonic, you know, Fender, made in America, expensive guitar, hanging there, and they were selling it for like $9.99 or something like that. It was like, whoa, you know. Granted, it had been used. Somebody bought it and then turned it into the pawn shop. It wasn't what they wanted, and they were stuck with it. It's not the way to get rid of that guitar, but they did. They did, and now the guitar is not moving, right? It takes a very specialized interest that I happen to have to want that kind of guitar. And I, for the money, if I really had to have it, if this was like a year or two ago, I'd have bought it. I'd have bought it right there. I'd have gave him an extra $50 just because, you know, because that's how stupid cheap it was. But yeah, they're trying to move it. They can't get it off the wall. And it's a great guitar. It was coincidental. I just got to play it for the first time. I loved it, but I wasn't going to buy it. I got so many guitars. Like the guns. I'm good. I got plenty of guitars, right? I am thinking of like a one that I'm missing. Like a 7-string for distorted, you know, metal type of stuff. But beside the point, besides many, many, many points that I'm making here. So we got these things that I would never have expected to get. My wife and I, we got a big TV and video game console, right? And we even bought like a game. There was one PlayStation game that she knew about. They only had like a handful of PS3 games there to be had, and one she recognized that her children had played, her boys had played when they were kids, you know, way back when, called Borderlands, right? I never heard of it. It was the Game of the Year edition, all right? So it was the Game of the Year in some year that I did play video games, not religiously, right? I had stepchildren of my own, stepsons of my own. They played, at that time, these same games for PlayStation 3, but they did it on like the Xbox version, whatever it was at that time. I don't give a shit. Microsoft, Bill Gates can kiss it, right? Kiss it when I'm dirty. I haven't had a shower in 2 days, that kind. Yeah. But yeah, this Borderlands game, and it's kind of cool. It's the sort of kind of game that I like in general. It seems a little bit oriented more towards children. And why shouldn't it be? I mean, it's a game. It's a video game. It should be oriented. But I've gotten accustomed to like war type of games that aren't really oriented towards children. They're not really oriented at all. They're just war games, you know, first person shooter types, blood and guts, foul language, and even into just like really immoral, indecent stuff, vice, and grift, and murder, you know, assassinations, and all that kind of stuff, which would be rated M for mature, right? And all the kids who are like 9 years old play them anyway, right? But I'll get into that. I'll get into that. But see, we did all this stuff, right? That's our little paradise by the dashboard light just became a memory, right? All these times we've watched all these movies together and everything like that, and held hands and made out, and now we got this big ass old TV. Isn't that something else? Incredible. Who would have thunk it?
This monologue is continued in the next episode, Chapter 00067, Blue Valentines, Part 2.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.